You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by Netmums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are.
Welcome everyone to the latest episode of Sweat, Snot and Tears. I hope no one is crying. I hope no one has any snot running down their face. And I hope no one's sweating. So I did something last night that I'm very proud of and I want to share with the group. I did something I haven't done since the kids were tiny, and I used to do it once a week. I went to bed at 6:30 p.m. and I slept all the way through, and I feel like a brand new woman who could take on any challenge you throw at me today. Wend, what do you think?
I'm jealous. I wish I'd gone to bed.
I think you need to try it.
I went open water swimming last night, which sounds a bit wanky, but was
really
nice. It's become a bit of a thing, though. I don't like doing things when they're a thing. So there's a quarry near me, and you go and you swim around the quarry, and it was really rather lovely. There's little moorhens beetling around, and there's a turtle. So it was lovely. I did that. But as a result, I'm bloody knackered. Today.
Did it not mean that you, after I've been swimming, I sleep like a dead person. You know, like when you're a kid, you need like 18 packets of crisps from the vending machine afterwards. Now when I swim, I just need to sleep like in a very dark room. Did it not mean that you slept really well?
Well, thanks to Netmums, no, because I had the Netmums fear, because that we've got quite a lot of work on today, lovely listeners. So I was a bit like, and didn't sleep very well. So I'm hoping that our guest is going to have the effect of caffeine and get me out of my stupor.
I think she will, because she's a very, okay, there's a clue coming, sunshiny person. Ladies and gents, please will you welcome Laura Hamilton. How are you, Missy?
Oh, thank you. No pressure. I've got...
You're Wendy's emotional crutch today.
No pressure at all, Mrs. Place in the Sun.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So let's go back a little bit and tell us, how was your lockdown?
Oh, which one?
Oh,
they merge, don't they? Actually, I would say the first lockdown was, well, they were two totally different experiences, because the weather was great, we could be outside. I've got a coffee shop and a bistro.
I know, I found this out about you and I was researching. It sounds awesome.
Oh, well, it's another side of my life, another side of the mum juggle. But so we own this place in the community. It was actually, it was a local post office and vintage shop, but it was closing down, and I decided that it would be a great idea, one of my brilliant ideas, to rescue the post office, become the local postmistress, do all the exams, and open up a coffee shop and bistro in the community.
Wait. Exams?
Yeah, I had to do all these exams to become the local postmistress.
Seriously? I didn't know. I thought you could just be a post person if you wanted to be.
No, it's not the case of just like selling stamps.
We've not had this before. This is amazing.
So, no, it's a bit like running a bank when you have a post office. You have like Security Corps come and deliver money every week, huge sums of cash in the safe out the back. Like, oh, it was a stress.
Lady, how is this ever going to work when half the time you're in Spain talking about villas?
That's exactly what Alex said to me. My husband said exactly that to me. Laura, how on earth are we going to run a coffee shop? Or how on earth are you going to run a coffee shop is actually what he said to me. How are you going to do that when you spend half your life abroad? We've got two young children and you know nothing about running a business of this kind or anything like it. And that's the worst thing someone can say to me.
Nice little backup there from your husband. You know nothing about this.
But that's the worst thing that you can say, because if someone says to me, you can't, that won't happen, you can't do that, I'm like, come on, let's try.
You are me. I'm so glad I've met myself finally.
But it's, you know, when you say to someone, oh, you can't do it, you believe you can't, but it's like, well, actually, you know, you're in control of it, so no, let's try and make it happen. So that was that 5 years ago, and in answer to your question, how is it going to run it, and in answer to my husband's question as well, how are we going to run it and do it? Well, you build a team of people that you employ, local people in the community, and my involvement in the business, whatever I can do remotely, which obviously 5 years ago was like, what do you mean do stuff remotely? Fast forward 5 years and that's what everyone does. So, but my point was the first lockdown, it was like, right, we've got this business, shit, we've got 24 staff, what are we going to do? I don't want to put them on furlough.
No.
I want to basically help the community and use our suppliers to turn the place into a village shop. And so that's what we did. All the people in the community that couldn't get, you know, online deliveries from all the supermarkets or couldn't get out of the supermarkets, I was like, right, well, let's help them. So that's what we did. So I found myself in the first lockdown delivering boxes of fruit and veg to 95-year-old Dorothy, who's...
Oh,
yeah,
amazing.
She's coming to the shop tomorrow, actually, for afternoon tea, which is quite amazing. And she's alive and kicking and well, and it's like, yay! So my kids, obviously, I was having to do homeschooling from like 9 to 12 in the morning.
You're making me feel tired just talking about your life, but carry
on. I was going to say, bloody hell, if you want to feel energised, it's like... No, but so I was having to do that, and then obviously it was like, right, Rocco Talia, we're not saving lives through the NHS, but actually, do you know what? Let's be little delivery superheroes. So that's the way that I kind of like wanted Rocco and Talia to think, look, you know, we can help, we can deliver to people. And it was lovely for me because I would knock on people's front doors, obviously like masks and everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, people would go, I saw you this afternoon selling a house to somebody in Spain. What on earth are you doing delivering my cucumbers? I'm like, you know. So, but
just keep him busy.
When it's your business. Yeah, when it's your business, my attitude was like, well, you know, I'm hands-on, I want to be there and I want to support the team and I want to support the community where we can. So that was my experience of lockdown one. And then I was so, so unbelievably fortunate that when... things started to open up again between lockdowns, and there was that window of travel. A Place in the Sun kicked back up again into production, and I ended up in Greece for the whole of last summer filming with the children, of course.
That's nice.
And so we did that. And my work pattern is I generally will do a big chunk of filming in the holidays, in some holidays, in Easter or whatever, and I'll take the children with me, and that's when I'll do sort of a big chunk. And then when I come back to the UK and we hit term time, then I tend to do a week, 5 days away from them. I'm not going to lie, it's quite nice now they're at school and I have a little bit of a week to myself sometimes. It wasn't a case of trying to dodge quarantine last year, but it just happened. I didn't have to quarantine once until December when I was in the Canary Islands with the children filming, and it got announced that you would have to quarantine coming back from the Canary Islands. And I was in Fuerteventura and I was due back into the UK on the 19th of December. And to be honest, I really wasn't that fussed. I mean, it was like, well, everything's locking down anyway and it's Christmas and I'm going to be at home. And so I did do, that was the first time that I did the quarantine.
At least you got home. Could have been worse.
Yeah, well, actually, you say that, but in hindsight, I think we'd have been better off bloody staying in Fuerteventura, because then I wouldn't have had the winter lockdown with the kids, which was, I mean, look, it was for everybody, right? And it was so hard. I think it affected my son way more than it affected my daughter, because he was so, I mean, they're both very sporty, my children, but Rocco's life was like football one night, rugby another night, swimming another night, you know, out with his friends. He's the kind of child that, okay, you know, he will watch TV, but he's not into computer games. He doesn't want to sit and learn remotely. It was like, he needs to be out. And it was like, couldn't do any of that. Couldn't see any friends, couldn't see any family, couldn't do any of your sports. So what? And, you know, I think everybody's mental health was just, it's just, and it worries me. What worries me so much is that we don't know the long-term effects, even now, of this. And I'd like to think, you know, we're back, you know, he's back at all his clubs and my daughter's at her things again. It's a time really, I just sort of don't want to think about.
I know.
But it was tough.
So you've been
quite open about the effect that negative comments on social media can have and the effect they've had on you. And I know you've said in the past it's actually gone so far as to trigger panic attacks.
Yeah.
Are you glad you've been open about it? Like,
Do you know what? I have, because one thing I would say is sometimes people would just think, oh, my life's just rosy because I just do a place in sun and I'm always abroad and I'm always on holiday and I'm always staying, and I'm not on holiday, you know, but I'm always staying in these lovely places. And but, you know, that might be what you see of my life through my social media, because that's what I post on my social media. I don't necessarily post about, you know, the other things that are going on in my life. One, because I think, do people really want to see it? But two, because actually I'm so busy that when I post on my social media and I'm away and I'm filming with the crew, that generally is the time when I have sort of 5 minutes to do it. But it affected me. I've never suffered from panic attacks before in my life, and I didn't know what was going on, because over the years, as well as In a Place in Sun, I've done a number of different shows, from like Dancing on Ice to The Jump. And I think I have this reputation of being someone that's quite strong and tough and hard, and I can, you know, deal with whatever's chucked at me. And there is a part of me that I am a very strong and resilient person. And I got bullied at school when I was sort of like 14, 15. And I do think that part of the reason why I am the way I am now is because I went through that. And I just vowed that, you know what, I'm never going to let that happen to me again. And actually, I have to have this like tough barrier. But I am an extremely emotional person. I posted on my social media only last week that when house hunters buy properties on Place in the Sun, I bloody cry. Like, I get goosebumps sat there in 35 degrees of heat because I know how much it means. And I just think sometimes people not get the wrong impression of me, but they do sort of think, oh, you're hard and you're ambitious and you're this and you're that. And you're like, no, do you know what? I'm just living my life and I just want to make the most of every minute, and that doesn't make me a bad person. But with the panic attack situation that happened, I understand that when you're in TV or in the public eye, you're never going to make, you know, appeal to everybody. Someone will prefer a certain presenter on A Place in the Sun over me. Like, that's just the way of the world. If we all like the same person and we all like the same things, life would be boring. But, you know, I do what I do on A Place in the Sun, and I do what I do on any other TV show, and I love it, and it's my job. And I'm kind of like, probably wrongly, I accept the fact that there will be negativity and there will be criticism. And I just sort of think, oh, well, I have to put up with that and deal with that, because if you're going to do what we do and put ourselves in the public eye, then, you know, there will be criticism. However, when it came to what happened in lockdown and with the shop, which is a business that I own and I set up and is very close to where I live, and, you know, I did it for my family and to support the community, and I opened up this this app called Nextdoor, and I couldn't believe the amount of stuff that was being said about me, my family, my children, like, and I was thinking, what has running the shop and what we're doing with the shop got to do with like my TV like stuff? And it just felt like, hang on, these are people in my neighborhood that are talking about me saying these things, because it's like it's the next app.
Very
and that's what it was. And I started, you know, I was working, like doing the homeschooling, trying to juggle everything as we all were, trying to keep this business going. And I started to lose my voice. And I thought, God, like, why am I losing my voice? Like, is it, am I then starting to think, oh, am I getting a cough? And so I spoke to a friend of mine who was a GP, and I said, like, is a symptom of coronavirus, like, losing your voice? Because, like, I'm getting really husky. He was like, no, it's not. It's probably just a stress thing that's happening to you, and you'll be fine. Don't worry. But then one night, after having read all this stuff, and it was hard because I would say to Alex, like, have you read this stuff? Like, it's awful. And he'd go, oh, just ignore it. And I'm like, but I can't, because it's so personal. It was more about me than anyone else. But I'm not saying that when you're a TV presenter, you know, you're not putting your own personality, you out there. But it was almost like, I don't know, I can't describe it, but...
Well, they could have been people that you said hi to in the street. That's the point, isn't it?
Yeah,
like, that's a big that's the difference between something like next door and something like Instagram.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with it? Who do you, like, what did you do?
So I went upstairs and Alex was saying to me, like, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? And I was like, I just don't know. I can't describe what's happening. I just don't feel right. So I went upstairs to lay down on the bed. And no matter what, I just couldn't get in, like, I was trying all these different positions to try and breathe, and I couldn't breathe. And then I ended up just calling him and saying, I think you need to call an ambulance because I don't know what's going on. And so, and he was like, are you serious? I was like, yeah, I think you need to call an ambulance. So an ambulance turned up and I felt such an idiot because the paramedic walked through the door and, you know, went through all these different things. And then after maybe like 5 minutes... maybe probably less than that, said to me, okay, your oxygen levels are normal and this is happening and you haven't got coronavirus, don't worry, you're not going to, like, you know, be, and because I was sort of thinking, oh God, breathing machine, I'm going to be in hospital, I'm going to have to be intubated. I don't, just all these things started going through my head. And he just said to me, look, have you ever had a panic attack? And I sort of went, no, like, what are you talking about? Like, no, he's like, you've had a panic attack. That's what this is. And then I just felt awful because I was like, I've wasted your time. I've wasted your time when there's all these people that are, you know, needed to be rushed to hospital because of the coronavirus. I feel like I've wasted your time and I'm only having a panic attack. And he was like, no, you haven't. Don't feel like that. You know, this is serious. And you shouldn't feel guilty. And then I started thinking, God, like, how have I let these people, like, get to me? How have I let this negativity get to me? And so I also felt a little bit silly for that. But then, as you say, I am normal. I am a real person.
You're human, though. Like, give yourself a bloody break, woman.
We're in the middle of a coronavirus, and then you found out that people were saying things behind your back. I mean, to be honest, I think the panic attack was not bad at all.
Yeah, no. I mean, now it's happened, and if it happens again, I know what it is. I know how to deal with it.
So how do you manage it now, Laura? What's your strategy?
The shop's being sold, actually.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's a big decision.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I love a project. I've been buying and selling houses since I was 19, like buying rundown wrecks, doing them up and then selling them. And in a way, what happened with Lord Roberts on the Green, as it's now known, 5 years ago, that was a bit of a development project. Well, it was a development project. It was to build the business. It had a flat above the shop and it had the potential to develop a house. So the house and the flat were developed and they were sold. And then the business, I very much, when I did it 5 years ago, thought, do you know what? I want this business to be for the children. I want to have something that I've done for them. But managing 24 staff, as amazing as they are, and the place wouldn't be what it is without the team. And I see myself very much as part of that. You know, when I'm in there, I'm happy to jump on the washing up. I mean, they have a laugh at me because I'm in the bins quite a lot, crushing the rubbish down because it's overflowing. And then there'll be customers in the garden. I'll be like, don't you be taking photos of me in the bins and posting it on Instagram. but I feel like I've achieved what I've wanted to achieve out of that project. I've taken it to where I wanted to take it to. And now it's time. It could go to another level. It's got so much potential. It's a beautiful place. And I'm really proud of what we've created. After a year, by the way, I did have to close down the post office element of it because the coffee shop side of the business became so successful. And unfortunately, post offices are a bit of a dying trade. And it didn't work. So, it is now just a coffee shop and bistro, and I'm so proud of the brand we've built and the place that it is. I mean, estate agents talk about it in their marketing material as like one of the main attractions in the area, and people relocate out of London to the area and they say how lovely it is to visit, and that's, you know, I'm so proud of that. But now it's time to pass the reins on to somebody else, and let them. I think it needs to be run by somebody that is their main focus, their business.
So what's next then? If you're selling your prized possession, your business, what's next for Laura?
There'll be something else. What that is just yet, I don't know. I mean, I do say that I'm very entrepreneurial. I'm always coming up with different business ideas. And when you're like that, some of them spark, some of them don't. And, you know, you have to try sometimes for a little while at things before you then go, well, that's not working, so I'm on to the next. And so, I mean, I don't know how long it will take for the business to sell. It's in the pandemic, it definitely became more, it's become more valuable because of staying open and, you know, the business has done very well. So I do think it hopefully won't take too long, but selling a business is very different to selling a house. So, and with the 24 staff that come with it. So we'll see how long that takes. But I don't know, probably more property. I definitely want to do more property, buying places and doing them up. And as I said that the place was for Rocco and Talia, I think what I'll do when the business is sold is I'm thinking maybe buying somewhere of my own abroad for the children that we can have as a little buy to let, or I don't know, we'll see.
You clearly have a lot of guts and a brave about taking on these challenges. And
crazy,
we know from listening in the NetMums forum and watching what everybody posts that the kind of things that you do are the kind of things that a lot of parents and mums especially are desperate to do, but are a bit fearful to take the plunge. If there's a parent or a mum listening to this now who desperately wanted to have a go at setting up her own business or buying yours and taking it over, or buying a buy-to-let flat so that she's got something to leave the kids in future, but is scared, what would you say to them about taking the plunge?
I just always have the attitude of if you don't know, like if you never try, you'll never know. And I don't think it's good to live your life with regret. So I'm like, I don't know. I always think like, what's the worst can happen? Somebody, you know, if the business doesn't work out or your idea doesn't spark, at least you tried. And it's more of a, I think it's more of a failure if you don't try and then you look back and go, well, why didn't I do that? I think having a great support network around you can help massively. And finding it, you know, finding that team. So I don't know, taking the plunge. I think it has to be within you. Like, it has to be within you. And some people want to go for it and some people don't. And I've always been quite gung-ho, I suppose, that I'm like, oh, do you know what? I'll throw a challenge my way, I'm going to do it. And having that mindset of I've got a growth mindset rather than a fixed mindset. And I will always try and turn a negative into a positive. And I think if you can do that, that can help when it comes to taking the plunge. And I know that's hard. That is hard to turn negatives into positives. But I think that with the shop in the pandemic, I could have so easily just said, you know what, let's shut it. Let's put everyone on furlough. Let's take the money from the government. Let's just give up. And I was like, no. I want to look back on this and go, we did it. We got through it. It was tough, but look what we achieved. And so I think it's that. I think, you know, when you come to taking the plunge, think about the achievement perhaps that you're going to get out of the other side.
Well, it leads on really nicely because one of the questions we always ask our guests is how do you want to be remembered by your kids? And some of what you were saying just then kind of echoed through that. So how do you want to be remembered by your kids?
I want to be remembered by my children as definitely someone that will always see a positive in things and embracing challenges. I'd love them to say, you know, mum would always embrace challenges. My children say to me, mummy, you love an adventure already. they're like, mummy, you love an adventure. You love to go to different places to do different things. And I'd like them to I constantly instill in Rocco and Talia, I'm telling them material things don't matter. You know, I want you to just be happy, be kind, and do a job you love. Like, I just think find things in life that you love. Don't just do something because you think, oh, that's going to earn me this money and this, it will, you know, give me this lifestyle. I'm like, just be happy and kind.
I love it. Now, from the serious to the not quite so serious, but it's an important business. What's for tea and who's cooking?
Oh, well, tonight, three members of our team are leaving tonight. So dinner is, and I've taken this upon myself to do it because nobody catering companies are around.
Yeah.
I'm doing all the canapés and
nice. I could go a canapé now.
I love canapés.
Bit of champers and
what canapés are you making? Yeah.
Oh, we've got like mini beef Wellington.
That's it. That's the one I want.
Yeah.
Wendy's packing her bag and she's off to see you now.
Yeah. Smoked salmon blinis. I've got some, I'm going to do some halloumi,
halloumi like skewers,
just like nachos and guacamole. And so it's not really your dinner as such, is it? It's going to be sort of more canapés and nibbles.
Lovely.
At Lord Roberts tonight. So yeah, little leaving soiree at 7 o'clock. So the children are...
Well, we'll see you there.
Shit, we'd better let you go and make some canapés. Right, before you go, last question. You have to imagine you're tucking Annie and I into bed as if we're your kids and you have to sing us your lullaby.
Because we know every family has one.
Oh, God. You serious?
To be honest, you're probably too knackered at the end of every day after everything you've done to sing anybody a song.
What about... It's a little bit funny, this feeling.
Oh, my God, you actually can sing as well. Flippin' heck.
I don't know the words, can easily hide. I don't have much money, but boy, if I did, I'd buy a big house where we both could live.
She says she can't sing.
Wow.
Well, on that note, you've got to go because you're just quite frankly too good.
Yeah, you're too talented. You're so
you put me on the spot.
Yeah, go on, bugger off and make your canapés. Have a lovely day.
Oh, thank you for being such a marvellous guest and for helping
me.
It felt like a meeting of the Mums Who Take On Too Much support group.
Yeah,
meeting of mentalness.
If anyone else would like to join, just drop us an email.
Yeah. Have a lovely day, Laura. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Oh, God, you didn't tell me you were going to put me on the bloody spot.
But you didn't tell us you could bloody sing better than Elton John himself.